Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show, and there are a lot of good people involved. The host is Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. On today's program, we begin with a two-part conversation with David Rose. He's an award-winning entrepreneur and MIT Media Lab scientist who's going to talk to Carol about his new book titled Enchanted Objects, Design, Human Desire, and the Internet of Things, published by Scribner.
You call the items that we're going to have in the future, and some that are out there already, you call them extraordinary enchanted objects.
Right.
Now, what do you mean by that?
By enchanted objects, I mean that I think that the way we'll interact with technology will be...
Technology.
what I mean is that things like an umbrella or pill caps or even a coffee table could have a little bit of technology embedded that is much easier to use than the smartphones that we have today. On the cover of the book is an umbrella. It's an umbrella I invented, and rather than just being a normal umbrella that collapses and sheds you from the rain, it also has little LEDs in the handle, so it gets the weather report from AccuWeather, the same place you might go on an internet site to get the weather. But instead, it just puts that data into the handle of the umbrella. So as it's sitting there on the wall, it has this little LED sprinkling pattern, so you don't forget it as you leave. So instead of having to stay up late and watch the news or go to a website, instead it just puts the information exactly where you want to know it, which is right as you're walking out the door.
And you know, it makes so much sense. And I just thought it was so great that you get a lot of the ideas for these enchanted objects by looking at other things that have, you know, come out in the past, from fairy tales to movies. And where did you get the inspiration for this wonderful umbrella? I want one.
Well, it came from the story of Frodo, who in Middle Earth has a sword called Sting. He, you know, ventures with the hobbits, and Frodo's sword Sting has a special capability, which is it glows blue when orcs are nearby. So in the same way that Sting anticipates its own use, this umbrella, which really couldn't be simpler in terms of a technology, you know, just knows that it's going to rain and anticipates your needing it. And another object that I created in my last company, which was called Vitality, was a smart pill cap that knows that if you need to take your medication. And we helped people by offering just the subtlest of nudges, by having the pill cap glow or having it play cute little arpeggios like doot-doot-doot-doot-doot so that you wouldn't forget to take a med, or even call the home phone or send someone a text message so that they're reminded if they haven't done that thing. And we worked with Mass General Hospital and Harvard Medical School to do a study for people that have hypertension and found that people without the glow cap take their medication less than 70% of the time, and people with it take it over 90% of the time. So it was a big difference.
And it's so important to your health to take your medications when you're supposed to. You say that one of your enchanted objects that you are presently working with, and you're really, really excited about it, is a narrative plastic clip. So tell us what it's all about and what major advantages does it have?
Well, I'm intrigued with wearables, which is this new category of computers that are embedded in things that we put on our bodies. So embedded in watches like the new Apple Watch, or embedded in jewelry like a necklace that tracks how many steps you've walked, or a bracelet that tracks how many steps you've walked. A lot of people are wearing these from companies like Nike or Jawbone or Fitbit. And I've been using some of these, and as well as the narrative clip, which is a little, it's almost like a tie clip or a little brooch size device that has a camera embedded in it. So instead of pulling out your smartphone and taking pictures of things that are inspirational throughout the day, it's called a life logging camera. So it will just automatically take a photo every 30 seconds and make a little film strip of your day, which gives you sort of a sense of whether you were inside or outside all day, or how often you snacked, or how many people you interacted with, and whether those people were smiling. And, you know, it sort of reveals, it gives you a digital portrait that reveals things about people's habits and rituals that maybe they didn't understand before.
I think it could be very commercial. It could go along with some diet plans with Weight Watchers, because really, if you looked at what you ate every day, that is the best thing to really make you aware of what you're doing. I think it's, you know, a very great innovative idea.
Well, yeah, I did not invent the narrative clip. It was invented by some young students in Sweden, and it was funded through a website called Kickstarter, which has really been great for enchanted objects. There are a lot of startups and a lot of my students from MIT who are starting companies by putting ideas out, making a little video and a prototype, and then putting the idea on one of these what they're called crowdfunding websites, like Kickstarter, or another one is Indiegogo, like indie movie, but Indiegogo. And you can put your idea on the website, and people can go and see if they like it. And if they do, they can order the device. But it's a pre-order for the device, and then the company gets enough money so that they can actually go out and make the 1,000 units or however many were ordered.
Talking about smart objects, didn't you build an intelligent trash can at the Media Lab?
I did. I think a lot of people have had this fantasy of building a smart fridge for a long time. And companies like Samsung and LG and Whirlpool have prototyped these things that would, you know what you've put in the fridge and know when the milk's going bad. And the problem with fridges is they're so big and so expensive that people really don't update and upgrade their refrigerators very often. And so my thought was, rather than tracking things on the way into your house, why not track them on the way out of your house? And so I made a trash can that embeds a little barcode scanner and camera on the inside of the lid. So it basically looks down at the trash and figures out what you've just thrown out. So it can, if it's packaging for a toothbrush, or if it's a container for blueberries or strawberries, or it's a can of like coconut milk or something, it basically automatically puts those things on your grocery list. And increasingly people are getting groceries delivered by like Peapod, or Amazon is doing this, so we called it the Amazon trash can. And what was fun about building that prototype was we were pretty good at noticing what people are throwing out, and that did correspond in many cases to what people wanted to reorder in the house. But we thought it was also an opportunity to help people make better choices about food by suggesting an in-season fruit or a locally sourced product, or a product that might be a little bit better for your health. Like if it's the third box of cookies that you're throwing out that week, it might give you a hard time before it just automatically orders the fourth.
One of your research groups, I think, has developed something that's very interesting. It's a solution for small space living called City Home, because there are a lot of older people, as well as our children and grandchildren, who are looking for smaller, less expensive places to live in the urban areas where they live or work. So can you tell us about City Home? It's so different, and I guess it has a central hub that holds spaces on demand. So what does that mean? You can just call up a piece of furniture that you need?
Yeah, it's almost like that. I don't know if you remember the holodeck from Star Trek, but it was this fantasy that you had this empty white room, and you could do holographic projections, so you could make it into a jungle or a bar scene or whatever the situation, the simulation was. So we were inspired by Star Trek tech, and I think you asked this question earlier, is sort of where do all the inspiration for these things come? And in the book, I try to go back and forth between fairy tales from Hans Christian Andersen, or the Brothers Grimm, or Greek myth like Icarus and the aspiration to fly, or spy culture like James Bond, where you have these incredibly small sort of sensors or earphones that allow you to effortlessly communicate with people who are miles and miles away. A lot of the fodder for what we could make with this new Internet of Things or enchanted objects come from these aspirations that are old, that are revealed through fairy tales that we all know and love. So the City Home is trying to solve this problem that the price of per square foot in large cities where a lot of young and old people want to live is just skyrocketing. So if you want a 1,000 square foot apartment in Manhattan, it costs $1.3 million to buy that. So it's, you know, just out of reach. So what we tried to do with the City Home project was to look at the activities that people do in their apartments and to try to apply transformer technology, the ability for things to sort of fold up or nest or otherwise transform, and try to create a space that's about a third of that size, so it'd be a third of the money, but then takes all the space hogs like the bed or a big dining room table or couches and tries to make those things disappear. And the way that they disappear is they either origami-like fold up, or they get hauled up into a ceiling, so the bed gets nested up into the ceiling, or tables sort of accordion-like fold up, and all of that is assisted by clever MIT mechanical engineers and also some computation to know who's there and what do you want to do.
That's David Rose in conversation with Carol Marks, and they're talking about his new book titled Enchanted Objects, Design, Human Desire, and the Internet of Things, published by Scribner. And we have part two of this conversation between Carol Marks and David Rose coming up next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
Did you know an estimated 16 million Americans suffer from a chronic inflammatory facial condition called rosacea, and most of them don't know it? Often mistaken for acne, there are many signs and symptoms of rosacea besides facial redness, pimples, and visible blood vessels. Other symptoms may include burning, stinging, swelling, and even enlargement of the nose. Rosacea can also affect the eyes, causing a bloodshot appearance and irritation that could lead to vision loss. Any one of these signs and symptoms can mean rosacea, and without medical help, it can become increasingly severe and wreak havoc on your personal and professional life. Rosacea typically appears any time after age 30. So if you experience any sign of rosacea, see a dermatologist for diagnosis and treatment. Or for more information, visit the National Rosacea Society at rosacea.org.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, reminding you that you can follow the adventures of Carol Marks at the Touch of Gray website, which is atouchofgray.com, and Gray is spelled with an E. Speaking of Carol Marks, here she is again for part two of her conversation with David Rose, the award-winning entrepreneur and MIT Media Lab scientist, talking about his new book, Enchanted Objects, Design, Human Desire, and the Internet of Things, published by Scribner. In this segment, they're going to talk about how we will interact with technology in the future and what products we can be on the lookout for.
And I was also intrigued by the fact that you can put your bed away, say, for the day, by doing something really easy, because there are ways that the furniture can pick up some signals from your body that will tell it what to do.
Yeah, I think rather than today, most of us think that the way we interact with computers is through keyboards or mice or touch screens that require a lot of control over fingers. And I think increasingly we'll see interfaces that are more voice-based, and I think most exciting is gesture-based. So being able to sort of point at something like curtains and make a big sweeping motion like a orchestra conductor might make, like that could actually open the curtains, or point to the bed and make a sweeping up motion like Seiji Ozawa used to make, and the bed disappears. And so being able to sort of point at things and gesture your intent, I think, will increasingly be one of the ways that we interact with technology.
And I also very much enjoyed learning about the way enchanted objects need to communicate with us. And you said that it's important that they channel such things, you know, as our sound and smell and touch. And why the sense is so important, and why is touch particularly an important one?
Well, when I think about how technology might enter our lives in a way that's subtle and incidental and elegant, I think about all of the things that we already interact with in the world, like drawers that we open or cabinets we open, door handles, light switches, clothing. Like, if you think about all of those existing things that we have in our lives and how to make them all just a little bit better and a little bit smarter and a little bit more able to accommodate our needs and anticipate our wishes, I think a lot of those things involve touch and just sort of a haptic feedback. So one example of some touch-based interfaces in my house, which has way too many of these prototypes, is a set of cabinetry. So there's a cabinet in my living room that my six-year-old can open, and if my parents in Wisconsin open their cabinet in the kitchen, then they have a persistent Skype connection, so a video conferencing connection. They can just see each other. They can look into each other's eyes, that they're well lit and that have high-quality sound, and there's nothing else that cabinet, you know, does. There's no complicated interface, but cost of technology is coming down so much that I'm happy to dedicate a little 1-foot by 1-foot cabinet, and so are they, just as a portal to their grandkids. And I'm happy if they talk 4 or 5 times a day for
absolutely
2 minutes each.
And it's exciting, and it's great for everybody. In your book, you have about 50 products that you talk about. So I want to know, how many are available for people to buy today?
Yeah, I created this periodic table of enchanted objects, and I try to organize all of these emerging things based on aspirations, sort of, or superpowers, like the interest in knowing all, like omniscience, or connecting seamlessly with another human, like telepathy, or immortality, living a long and healthy life, or personal expression, things like Lego bricks that have computation inside, or Guitar Hero that helps you learn how to play an instrument much more quickly, or a magic paintbrush. And about half of them are prototypes or things that I think are pointing in the direction that we will see, and about half of them are commercial products that are available today, either through crowdfunding sites like Kickstarter or Indiegogo, or just on the market and available at Amazon.com. I mean, I talk about products like the Nest thermostat and Nest smoke detectors, which I think are really well designed. But the Nest thermostat, it was just recently acquired by Google for $3.2 billion, which was validating, I think, for everybody who's working on these things. And that notices if you're home and adjusts the thermostat to save you money if you're not home. So it's a very simple, elegant device. It just looks like an old Honeywell 1950s thermostat designed by Dreyfus, I think, and an industrial designer in the 50s. And so it has that same round shape. And, you know, you turn it to adjust the temperature, but then it also has some intelligence built in so it can save you money over time.
You know, I like the idea, and I know it's going to happen, and I hope it happens sooner with all these things rather than later, because all these, you know, enchanted objects are really like mechanical deputies that run the systems in our homes, our cars, our cities, in more efficient ways. And the most important part of it all is we don't have to do that. They're doing it for us.
Right. Can I tell a quick story?
Sure.
About how these things can just work on their own?
Yep.
So I renovated a kitchen a couple of years ago and put in some enchanted shades, and they're connected to the internet. They're shades for three windows, and they have three different interfaces to control them. One is they have an iPad app or an iPhone app, so you can go to an app on your phone and tweak, you know, say, I want all three of them to go up, or I want them to be half height. Or there's a physical button on the wall next to the light switch, so you can control them that way. Or they know what day of the year it is, and that I live in Brookline, Massachusetts, and they know what time the sun rises and the sun sets for that day at that altitude. And so they just go up exactly at sunrise, and they come down exactly at sunset for that day. And I tell you, that third mode, the way, just anticipating that I want them up and I want them down, is what we use 99% of the time. And so I hope that one of the ways that we interact with enchanted objects is that they just learn us rather than us learning them, and they anticipate our needs, and they just sort of take care of things for us, like a smart vacuum cleaner can just sort of sweep up if you're not around, or anti-lock brakes can, you know, just sort of work to make braking work better in the rain, but it's not something you have to learn.
That's David Rose in conversation with Carol Marx, and his book is titled Enchanted Objects, Design, Human Desire, and the Internet of Things, published by Scribner. I'm Michael Harrison. Thank you, Carol Marx. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues with Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine next.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do. And I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we are joined at this time, as is customary, by our senior correspondent, who also has a real job, in which he serves as vice president and executive editor of the trade magazine Talkers, which is the trade publication for the talk radio industry. We get a little behind-the-scenes peek at this medium called talk radio. His name is Kevin Casey. And Kevin, with news talk stations being really one of the main platforms of discussion about politics, this has been a heck of a political week, hasn't it?
Well, it sure has. You know, when midterm elections, presidential elections rather, are always very big, weeks leading up to talk radio.
And in a way, the midterm elections are historically like presidential elections, in as much as their referendum on how well the president is doing, is, as we've seen in this time around. And of course, then after the election this past Tuesday, there's been all the talk about how it's going to affect the country and what it means and what it holds for the next presidential election, and you know what it means in terms of legislation, et cetera, and all that. That being said, I am often asked by the press, being a participant in talk radio and involved also, as are you, as an editor at Talkers Magazine,
Does talk radio have power to
That's a great question, and a lot of people were critical of President Obama when he would reference Rush Limbaugh by name. And some said that it was not fitting of a president to single out one, you know, media performer as somehow causing problems. And there were others who said, yes, but talk radio listeners vote in huge numbers, and he knows that Rush Limbaugh and others who do political shows are talking to people who vote, and therefore it's a constituency that must be addressed. So you can look at it either way, but regardless, it shows the importance of talk radio to social issues, political issues, and then voting, of course.
Yeah, the fact is that a majority of the people who listen to talk radio who are eligible to vote do. And it cannot say the same for other media. A majority of just about nothing else.
That's true.
Votes. Most people do not vote. And one of the things that has become even more important today than ever before is this awareness that part of winning an election, you could win an election not necessarily being the most popular candidate if you're able to motivate the people that are predisposed to voting for you to go out and vote, based on the assumption that the other guy may not get all of his or her constituents out to vote. And this has happened a lot. As a matter of fact, in the primary, we see it all the time. The most zealous, extreme voters go to vote, and other people stay home. And as a result, you get candidates sometimes that can't win the general election.
True. And, you know, this past midterm election, there was concern that it would be a low turnout election, even though it's, you know, very there's a lot of controversy going on surrounding the presidency and any other issues. At the same time, that's why the president was out going to places where he felt he could get people who would be sympathetic to Democrats and his issues to just go vote. You know, he was a get out the vote thing more than anything that led up to the president's activity.
And that's the point. Much of today's campaigning is get out and vote as opposed to vote for me and not him.
Yeah.
You know, interesting stuff indeed. Well, talk radio, no matter what they say, talk radio remains at the center of the conversation when it comes to politics. Kevin Casey, I thank you for joining us. Kevin Casey is a senior correspondent here on the program. He is also the vice president and executive editor of the trade publication Talkers. You want to visit Talkers? Go to talkers.com. Check out the Heavy 100 of Sports Talk, which just debuted there. It's a very interesting feature. And I know so many of our listeners are into sports as well as politics. I'm Michael Harrison. A Touch of Gray continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family.
and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. In conversation now with Ann Anderson Evans. She's a legal secretary turned writing professor, and she's going to talk about her new book titled Daring to Date Again, a memoir published by She Writes Press.
You had already had 2 divorces, and you had been single for about 12 years before you decided you wanted to get back in the game.
Right.
Was there a precipitating event that made you say, okay, next?
Well, yeah, not a single event, but after 12 years of really delicious liberty, as a Catholic priest once said to me, celibacy has its virtues, and it does. A lot of freedom to think and do what you want. I started getting crushes on the most ridiculous people, completely inappropriate. People from exotic countries and a gay guy and a drug addict. I thought, I'm really
getting myself in trouble.
I have to start getting organized on this, and I really should start dating again. That I thought I would really do something stupid if I didn't get organized.
Now, when you obviously found out that dating today is a little bit different than when you had previously been dating.
Right.
You know, we think we know what's going on, but what was the biggest shock to you?
The biggest shock to me was that there was nothing wrong with younger men liking to go out with older women. I always thought, my second husband said to me before we divorce, there's a snowball's chance in hell that a woman over 40 will ever marry again. Like, everybody knows that men like younger women, right? Not so. Halfway through this adventure that I tell about in the book, I put another posting on Craigslist to see if it could happen again. You know, was this some strange fluke? And within 24 hours, I had about 50 responses, and of them, about 80% were 50 and younger. They like the steadiness and the humor and the experience of older women, and they don't have to deal with silliness about what your hair looks like and things like
mm-hmm.
that. So I'm not saying that they necessarily want to marry women who are, you know, make permanent relationships with them, although they do sometimes, but they enjoy the company of older women.
Now, getting one of the reasons you wanted to do this was, as you indicated in the book, you just didn't feel you wanted some sex back in your life, but you didn't really want to just go bounding from affairs. You liked the idea of marital sex and commitment. What was it like getting back into sex again? Did you have any concerns what it was going to be like there, or particularly with some of these younger men?
Well, I would correct one thing that you said.
Sure.
I had no desire to marry again. I did not want somebody saying, what, you're having oatmeal for dinner? Why are you doing that? You know?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be free, but I needed sex. And I wondered when the moment finally came where I had a date that I would look forward to where I thought, yes, this is going to break the 12-year drought. I wondered if it was like riding a bicycle, you know, do you really remember how to do it? And I was a little uncertain and unsure.
Were you nervous?
Yes, I was.
I mean, how could you not be?
Exactly. That's right. But fortunately, the person I met,
who was the policeman who was 24 years younger than I was, he was very confident, very calm, and put me at ease completely. So,
did he wear the uniform?
No. He offered to come by in a uniform, but I thought it might frighten the neighbors.
How about the cuffs? No cuffs?
No.
Oh. You know, we're getting off. You know, I mentioned how, and your book is so entertaining, and I'm so
glad to hear that.
Oh,
I'm
love
delighted.
It. And so many of us really can smile and see some of these things in ourselves and in others. But the characters in there are like fiction. I mean, did it ever hit you what a cast of characters you were creating in there?
Well, you know, I think that all of us, no matter who we deal with, they all have a story to tell. They're all characters. So it all depended on my ability to write them, to write the interesting things about them, and it took me a long, long time.
How is it moving on? Because there were a number of move-ons. Did you find that difficult?
Yeah. That was the thing about dating a lot of people, and I knew I had to date. My friend told me, "Ann, you have to date 100 men."
Yikes.
And I thought, 100 men? I can't even find one. But I knew I had to date a whole lot of people, and so that I could sort of compare and blow away all the preconceptions from high school where you went steady, and then you got pinned, and then you got engaged. You were... it kind of closed down my mind. So I just enjoyed each one as they came along and tried to learn something from each one. But every time it ended, it was a little disappointing because you always go out with hopes that, you know, something wonderful will happen. And it doesn't this time and next time and next time and next time. And after a while, I got thinking, ugh. Does every man have some tragic flaw that I can't live with? Is there no
one? It's in our DNA.
Yeah.
Now, can I give away the ending?
Yeah.
Okay, there is a happy ending. It ends with a wedding. As a matter of fact, I loved the ceremony about the two of you telling your love story during the ceremony with just a little bit of a slip of the tongue in there.
Yes, that was... All of my relatives had gathered from, there were about 60 people in the room, I guess, from little kids to, you know, older people. Some of them had driven a long way. Some of them didn't know each other. There was a little bit of awkwardness, you know, in the beginning. And the person who conducted the ceremony is a celebrant friend of mine who'd flown in from Tucson. And she hadn't been able to study the little changes we've made at the last moment. And she said that she wanted to tell our love story. And she said that Ann and Terry had both been dating wildly, and there was kind of a pause, and then everybody burst out laughing. And she said, "Oh, no, I meant widely." And it was true. We had been dating wildly. So and everybody kind of knew it. So that broke the ice, and the rest of the day was just wonderful.
Now, wonderful. So now you're married to Terry. Is the marriage, he may not be listening, is it working out the way you had hoped?
Oh, yes. It was hard. You know, you transform yourself, and then you attract different people.
Mm-hmm.
So the hard part is transforming yourself. And by the time I met Terry, I just knew that I was comfortable with him. And I was telling someone just the other day that he's the only person I know who I'm always happy to see. You know?
Wow, what a great
Even
thing.
My kids, sometimes you think, oh, God, you know, now I'll have to make dinner and and behave in a certain way or whatever. But I'm always comfortable with him. And now it's been 7 years. We'll have our 8th anniversary.
That's great. Now, I'm curious. Had you met Terry as one of the first people, do you think that you were sufficiently grown and he was sufficiently grown to have matched up then, or might the timing not necessarily have been right?
Well, that's a big what if, but I think not.
Yeah.
Maybe we would have been friends, and maybe over the, you know, as I went and dated all these other people, possibly we would have grown to be the friends that we are today. But, I mean, I don't know, but I don't think so.
That's Ann Anderson Evans in conversation with Steve Wiseman. Her book is called Daring to Date Again, a memoir published by She Writes Press. Steve Wiseman returns to talk about a scam that revolves around one of those opportunities to win a lot of money that come in your mailbox. That's next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, we come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast, and we're joined again by Steve Wiseman. He's an attorney, and he certainly is a prolific writer. He's the author of a number of books, including The Truth About Avoiding Scams and Identity Theft Alert, both published by Prentice Hall. He has a website called Scamicide.com, and he's here now to talk about a scam that you will want to avoid. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, it is hard to win any lottery. It's impossible to win one that you haven't entered. And it's scammers, the only criminals we refer to as artists, have found that it's extremely lucrative to scam people by convincing them that they've won various lotteries. Most lottery scams involve the victim being told they need to pay taxes or administrative fees directly to the lottery sponsor. However, no legitimate lottery requires you to do so. As with many effective scams, the pitch of the scammer seems legitimate. Income taxes are due on lottery winnings, but with legitimate lotteries, they're either deducted from the lottery winnings before you receive your prize, or you're responsible for paying the taxes directly to the IRS. No legitimate lottery collects taxes on behalf of the IRS from lottery winners. Other times, the scammer tells the winners that in order to collect their prizes, they need to pay administrative fees. Often the victims are told to send the fees back to the scammer by prepaid gift cards or Green Dot Money Pack cards. Prepaid cards are a favorite of scammers because they're the equivalent of sending cash. They're impossible to stop or trace. And again, no legitimate lottery requires you to pay administrative fees in order to claim your prize. Now, we're all familiar with the Publishers Clearinghouse sweepstakes from TV commercials where the winners are shown being surprised by the delivery of their giant check, which I think should come in like a little clown car where they all get out of it. But in any event, Publishers Clearinghouse is a real company that operates a legitimate lottery that many people enter, which is one reason the scammers pose as representatives of them. Coming up in November is going to be another major Publishers Clearinghouse drawing, and scammers will be contacting their victims by telephone, email, and text messages to inform them of their good luck in having been selected as the Publishers Clearinghouse winner. Once the contact's made with the potential victim, the scammers use the same tried-and-true lottery scam techniques I just talked about to cheat their victims out of the money. Fortunately, there is an easy way to know when you're contacted by Publishers Clearinghouse by phone, email, or text message informing you that you've won one of its multi-million dollar prizes, whether you've been contacted by the real Publishers Clearinghouse. Publishers Clearinghouse only contacts major prize winners in person. They don't contact winners by phone, email, or text message. So, if you do receive a notification of your winning in one of their multi-million dollar prizes in this fashion, you know it's a scam. As with other lotteries, remember, you can't win a lottery you haven't entered, and no legitimate lottery asks you to pay them administrative fees or taxes.
Thank you, Steve. Where's Ed McMahon when you need him? I'm Michael Harrison, and that about does it. We thank Steve Wiseman. We thank Kevin Casey. We thank, certainly, Beverly Santanella, our producer on the front line. And thank you for your excellent work as our producer. Of course, the great Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program, for their contributions to this audio event. And I invite you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups.